Some of the best blast movies we're seeing on the big screen. And today, I brought a very special guest on to recap some of his favorite theater experiences. Jason Peterson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thrilled to be here. Been looking forward to it.
Happy to have you. I've been trying to explain this to Steve forever, but you are essentially an older version of me. I think if mobile apps were a thing, Jason Peterson would have probably created Blast.
Yeah, I'm very jealous of folks of your generation growing up with this stuff, because you're doing something that I never knew could be done, and it's awesome. I love talking about movies, as you know, and I never really have that many people to talk to them about, and you guys have created a whole environment for people to do that, so it's awesome.
Yeah, well, we're happy to hear some of your stories. I know we've talked a bit at the lake a little bit about some of these stories and your insights, but would love to rattle off your top three Blast movies or top three theater experiences. Kick it off how any which way you want.
All right. Well, I first of all, before I get into any trouble, because I know my family, of course, is going to listen to this, so I have to mention a couple honorable mentions. One, the first movie I saw with my wife, For the Love of the Game. Not the best movie ever, but it was a very special night for me. First movie I ever took my kids to was Curious George. Another one, wasn't a great movie, but very memorable, but because I'm such a movie junkie that getting to take my kids to their first movie was something special. And then I could spend an hour just talking about movies that are nowhere near my top list, but listening to you guys recently and your battles between Denis Villeneuve and Christopher Nolan and back and forth. First of all, Nolan over Denis.
Really?
Nice. Incendies, I think, is really the most powerful Denis movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it yet. That's his first. Go check it out.
I've not seen it yet, but it's been on my list for a couple of months. Like, it's, I think, risen up to number two or three on my watch list. I mean, I'm sure you know, like, the lists get long.
It is an experience, I will tell you. And not necessarily a pleasurable one, but you got to see it. Anyway, I would say my top three blasts, I'm looking at different generations of my life, kind of. My number three would be Jurassic Park. It's not necessarily one of my top five movies. It's a great movie. It's Steven Spielberg at his action adventure finest. You know, I mean, it's great. But the experience for me was, you have to remember back then, Jurassic Park was a big book. Steven Spielberg's making this movie. People had been talking about it for a couple years, building it up. They're going to do this all practical. They're going to do it with new CGI technology. All of literally this pre-internet days, people are talking about this everywhere you go, that it's coming out. I actually, counting the days until whatever big movie it is that I can't wait to see. And this was absolutely number one that year. And I actually went into the service that summer. So I missed the opening of Jurassic Park. And going through. Go ahead.
No. That's a bad beat. I want to hear more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I literally going through basic training. And all I could think about is, as soon as I get out of here, I'm going to see Jurassic Park. And so every time I go into like the PX or somewhere, you'd see a magazine cover or something. Everything was Jurassic Park. And I, being the movie guy, still hadn't seen it. So after, I think, about 12 weeks, we got to leave base for the first time. And me and about 15 other guys went to see a double feature of Jurassic Park and In the Line of Fire with Clint Eastwood.
Nice.
And I will say this. So this is about August now. The movie had been out since Memorial Day. The theater was still packed. People still filling up the theater to see this movie. And of course, you know, I was completely blown away. There had been nothing like that from a CGI and a practical standpoint tied together. Like, everything before that was not that good. You know, you had Spielberg produced young Sherlock Holmes which actually had the first CGI character, and that was kind of his testing ground for Jurassic Park. If you have never seen that, there's a stained glass window character. It's a character that jumps out of the stained glass window, and it's the first actual CGI character in a movie.
Very interesting. Well, before you keep going, you can't mention the movie In the Line of Fire and not let me go on a mini I loved that movie growing up. There was always five, six movies on Encore that I would just watch on repeat. Back to the Future Part 3 and In the Line of Fire were like at the top of that list.
Well, you mentioned another one on an earlier podcast that you used to watch all the time, I think with your dad maybe, Young Guns. And you said, I don't know if it's so bad it's good. And I almost jumped through the Spotify app at that point. I'm like, what do you mean so bad it's good? It's just good.
Oh, now, boy.
You mentioned Tombstone, and that's a requirement, Steve. If you still haven't seen Tombstone, you need to drop everything and go see Tombstone. It is the greatest.
Seriously, yeah.
It's been on the list again, but I will watch it for this next week's pod.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. Like, just hearing that you haven't seen that makes me say, turn off the podcast right now and go, because it's that good.
It is that good.
Awesome.
All right, Jurassic Park. Sorry,
Jurassic Park. So the interesting thing about that was, I agree with you. In the Line of Fire, I thought was every bit as good as Jurassic Park when I walked out, because I wasn't expecting anything out of it really at the time. We were going to see Jurassic Park, and we just stayed for In the Line of Fire. But I was blown away by how much I liked that too. But the interesting thing about that whole thing was the hype waiting for it with the general public, and then me being delayed for months to see a big movie, you know, it was unbearable. So the moment of release when I finally got to see it was something I'll never forget. An interesting side note, that would have been 93, right? 93. Where I saw that movie was the Aurora Movie Theater, where years later, the tragedy at The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, happened. Wow.
Yeah, that was my movie theater when I was in the Air Force. That was right outside our base.
Wow.
Holy shit. Small world. Yeah. That is
crazy.
God, can't make it up. Where did you say it? Where is it located?
Aurora, Colorado. I was stationed on a base that was on the border of Aurora and Denver.
Very interesting. That's a deep cut pull. I totally forgot about that. That's
kind of why I shipped it up that when I was going to add that on there. I just found that to be a unique historical perspective, because when I would see the news of that going on, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was there 100 times, you know.
Gosh.
Wow.
Gosh. Okay. So this was the go-to for, I mean, how many years was that your theater?
2 years. 2 years I lived out there. Yeah.
100 movies in 2 years. I mean,
sounds like me.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. That was our thing to do. Like during the week, you couldn't do much. You know, we'd go out partying on the weekends. We'd go away skiing or whatever we could get away with. But during the week, once you were off duty, you know, the only thing you really could do in a short amount of time was run out and see a movie. And we didn't have TVs or anything in our, you know, there was no TV in your room or phone to look at. So we went to a lot of movies.
Yeah. And we were just talking about this. We just saw In a Violent Nature last night. We were talking about theater etiquette and how it's evolved. And I'm just curious, like Jurassic Park, the biggest movie of that year, packed until August, months later. I mean, are people still like hooting and hollering? Like, obviously no one's on their phone. Like, is it still a cool 100%. Environment? Cool.
100%. And one thing, and I don't know if you see this anywhere. I see it very, very rarely. One of the things that I remember growing up in all the big movies and everything was people would clap after a movie. And not just a little smattering, like the whole theater would applaud if it was worth it, you know, if it was worthy of it. I don't hear that anymore. Even you see something like Avengers Endgame, and there's a smattering of hoots and hollers, you know, like in the portal scene or whatever. But like you go and see Rocky, which we're going to talk about next, probably. Like people were like going nuts in the theater and cheering and then clapping as the credits rolled. But you just don't, I have not seen that anywhere.
The only movie that I can think of, that I've seen had that type of reaction is Spider-Man No Way Home. And it was kind of made that way. I don't know if you watched it in theaters or after, but like now when you revisit it, it's weird because all the points where people were like cheering and clapping and
the
hooting,
pause.
Yeah. Just these weird, awkward silences all throughout.
Yeah. It was all manufactured. It wasn't built up properly organically like it was when you're seeing Jurassic Park or Rocky, you know?
Yeah, there's a scene in Rocky One where towards the end of the first of the fight with Apollo, where the bell's about to ring, if I remember correctly, and he's just breaking his ribs. And if the fight lasts maybe 15 more seconds, Apollo Creed's done. It's over, right? And when I just remember when he's getting hit like that and the crowd is going nuts, you know? And then when you see Creed and things like that, you're saying, great, wonderful. But there wasn't any of that.
Okay.
But it absolutely was back then.
Let's just jump right into it then. So number two blast movie, Rocky, take this any which way you want. I think my first question has to be, I mean, leading up to Rocky, what's the hype surrounding some small, no-name Sylvester Stallone directing his own movie kind of thing? Was this just a sneaky find?
Yeah, so I was too little to recall any, you know, hype, and I'm sure there wasn't any. This movie was actually almost a made-for-TV movie. I don't know if you guys have ever heard the story that Henry Winkler was friends with Sylvester Stallone, and he was going to – Winkler had it, I think, sold to ABC. And they were talking about making a TV movie out of it. And they wanted nothing to do with Stallone, which was the case across the board for all the movie studios. They wanted nothing to do with Sylvester Stallone except to buy the screenplay. And Stallone had the balls to say no. He's broke, right? This guy is $2 away from living on the street. And he had the nerve to say, nope, I'm starring in this or you are not getting it. And was it Robert Chartoff, the producer, I think? And I swear, I didn't study this before. This is how ingrained these movies are in my life. I like just remember everything about them. I can't remember important things in life. I can't remember what I'm supposed to do at work tomorrow.
Me too.
Or something important. But if you want to ask me who wrote the screenplay for Superman 1, that, you know, that information's there instantly, right? Mario Puzo, by the way, coming off of Godfather.
Steve, I'm telling you, like the way that like you watch your like 25 movies in a week kind of thing. Anytime I text Jason, like, hey, I've got this movie. I just saw this. He's like already rattled off. Like, yep, saw this here, then directed by this person. Cinematography's gorgeous. Like he can recap the blast story. So
Ty texted me a few days ago and said that one of his favorite things about the pod and about talking movies with me is my name dropping of just these random people, like their common like household names. And he brought up Harold Sylvester from Vision Quest, which is one of my favorites, a great character actor from back in the day. And he said he was scrambling and Googling, trying to find out who it was mid pod.
Yeah, well, when he texted that the other day, it immediately Lunatic Fringe just starts playing in my head. It just instantly. I think that is a not the greatest song of all time by any means, but just a great musical cue.
Oh my gosh, we've talked. I don't know if you've seen the pod on Vision Quest. There are two movies in the Blast Hall of Fame. One of them is Vision Quest. Like that, I only can imagine how special that was in a theater. I'm sure Rocky obviously is its own beast, but the way my uncle explains what that movie did for him, I can picture myself in the theater getting fired up in that Lunatic Fringe scene when he's getting ready to shoot
with good sound. Absolutely,
so good.
You know, and it's funny that, you know, that, I mean, that's not what movies do, right? That's what they are. They affect everyone differently. Your uncle was into Vision Quest, and Rocky was everything to me. I hate to say Rocky was everything to me because like Star Wars had such a huge impact on my life too. But there was those two things in my childhood were Star Wars and Rocky. And Rocky, so back to your earlier question about what it was like, there was no hype. There was nothing. But when it came out, the word of mouth and the crowd reaction obviously just grew and grew and grew to the point where it's nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards and wins Best Picture. And then it is a cultural phenomenon. And then the wait begins for Rocky II. And that's where it lit for me. The wait for Rocky II and then the wait for Rocky III was monumental. I think the night I got to see Rocky II was almost as big as the night I saw Empire Strikes Back.
Wow.
Just because my dad wasn't into Star Wars at all. He took me, but he just thought it was silly, or, you know, I was so into all the toys and everything I wanted Star Wars, and he thought that was ridiculous. But Rocky, he could get behind. So we could bond over that. In the months leading up, I lived down on the street with my cousins, who were exactly my same age. It was a great childhood. We all grew up a couple houses apart. We're all big. My dad built a gym in our garage with a heavy bag and a speed bag. And this was in south side of Chicago. And we used to go boxing at our church. Our church had a gym, and they would have boxing on Wednesday or Thursday night. And we'd get the box as little kids with headgear and everything. I lived in a training mode for Rocky. And after Rocky II, I had the soundtrack and everywhere. Like, I mean, I would just do push-ups in my room listening to the training montage or Gonna Fly Now or something like that. You know, it was huge. But Rocky III was the one that was probably the peak excitement for me, because as we're waiting for Rocky III to come out, again, remember, this is all pre-internet. Nobody knows anything except for you get a little blurb in a newspaper in the entertainment section. And my dad, if there was anything about Rocky, go, oh, they're filming Rocky III. Updates, whatever. Well, we get an update with a picture of this guy from Chicago who had won the world's toughest man or world's toughest bouncer competition, and it was Mr. T. And this is going to be the new bad guy in Rocky III. And they showed a picture of him, and I'm like, Dad, he's going to kill him. Look at him. You know, and then my dad's like, oh, he's in trouble, you know, that kind of thing. So we go to a Bears game before the movie comes out. And me and my cousin, and we're probably, second, third grade, fourth grade, somewhere around there. We go into the bathroom. We're by ourselves. My uncle let us go to the bathroom by ourselves and walk in. And there's this dude with a mohawk and a jacket on that says, hi, I'm Mr. T from Rocky III. And I'm like, I go up to him after he washes his hand and stuff. Are you really in Rocky III? He goes, yeah, little man, that's me. I'm Mr. T. I hope you enjoy the movie, you know? And then I'm like, oh my, it was the most amazing moment of my life at that point. True story, Mr. T in the bathroom.
That's awesome.
So Rocky III was huge. And then Rocky IV was massive because we were just old enough to be going to the movies by ourselves at that point, sixth, seventh grade. And, you know, it was the height of the Cold War and we hate Russia. And, oh God, it was so good. Still is so good. Rocky V, we were seniors in high school. Everybody got dressed up, but there was like 20 of us got boxing gloves and mouth guards, and everybody was so pumped. Everybody was ready for this movie. Because even though Rocky IV isn't on par with Rocky or Rocky II, it is, right? From a fun factor. And so it was just a great, there was no stumbles at all. And so we didn't expect one when Rocky V came out. And then when that hit, and we were all sitting there as the movie's over, and we're like, what the hell was that?
Okay, so it was an immediate, okay, this wasn't good, because typically I feel like we've had a couple movies in our lifetime where we wanted it to be so good so bad, we were convincing ourselves like maybe we were wrong in the moment, and it just marinated over time. This was an immediate, why immediate. Does Rocky brain damage? Why is Rocky in a street fight? What's going on
here? Absolutely. You know what it was? He was not the same character in that movie at all. And you could blame it on the brain damage and all that, but he just wasn't the same character. He went back to his the correct version of the character in Rocky Balboa, and definitely Creed. But in Rocky V, that was not him. Go back and watch that. It doesn't fit who he was. It really
so
doesn't.
So bizarre. So, go ahead.
And the key thing about that, not that we should focus on the failure for too long, but if you think about it, that movie was all rap music, right? The music from Rocky was gone, and the music makes Rocky.
Yeah, complete pivot. That movie is very, very different. Very different. So what, I know 3, it sounds like, is your, like, best blast experience, but what's your favorite? What's the best Rocky movie versus what's your favorite Rocky movie?
The best is number 1. My favorite is number 2. Number 2, I had the record. Not only the soundtrack. I don't know if you guys are aware that they used to make records of the movie. So there'd be a narrator, and he'd say, Rocky, trains and blah, blah, blah. And then they would cut the narration with actual dialogue from movies. So I would listen to a version of the movie constantly. My sister would play, we would play Rocky. She would play Adrian sick in the hospital. and then she'd wake up in bed and go, I want you to do something for me.
Win.
What's that? Win. Dang. What are we waiting for? Take this. And they go off and start training. Oh, God. So good.
So
believe
good.
It or not, I have that that type of vinyl for the first Rocky. Just sitting in the room right now. Yeah.
Really?
One of my favorites. Yeah. I have one for Rocky and one for the original Halloween.
Wow. You know what my favorite one was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Cause you got the music, you got Harrison Ford grumbling his way through the record. Oh, it was great.
So I got to ask, with the release of Rocky, do you think since then you've seen a, like, just meteoric rise to stardom like Sly Stallone had since then that's at all comparable? Or, I mean, what was that like? Was he immediately a household name? Did it take
everywhere?
Rambo, yep. Or
everywhere. I wrote him a letter when I was in first grade and said, my mom fake mailed it for me. And I still remember what I wrote. I mean, he's on the Muppets. He's on everything. He was the darling of the scene back then because he was from nowhere. And the closest thing I could say, like things like Quentin Tarantino after Reservoir Dogs, boom, the guy was huge, right? Like one movie, huge. Kevin Smith a little bit for a minute there. He was that out of nowhere, bet on himself. And back then, when Clerks first hit, he was a big deal. His career, I don't think, quite turned out to what everybody expected it to be, but it was a big deal. But no, that Kevin Costner hit it pretty good with Dances with Wolves, but he was already somewhat of a name, so it wasn't like out of nowhere. But Dances with Wolves definitely, from that writer, actor, director standpoint, really took him to the top.
Awesome.
Any interest in the new Costner movie? We were just talking about it. I'm not married to it, but Sam Worthington's in it. The guy that like we're always pulling for, like our generation's like,
yeah.
Like they try to make him a big namer, but it never panned out. So we're rooting for
him.
Yeah,
no, it sure didn't, and it could, and it certainly could have went the other way. I agree with you. I am looking forward to it, but I am skeptical. It seems odd to me that this whole release format makes me wonder, like, how are you releasing a movie in June and then this is part 2 in August and then a third part shortly thereafter? It just seems odd. We've never seen it before. So it makes me think that maybe movie number 1 isn't a complete movie and that they have to have the second one right away, maybe. So yeah. Should it be a TV series? Possibly is kind of when I look at it, I go, maybe this should be an 8-episode series. I don't know.
Yeah. My last question before moving on to your number 1 is, do you have a favorite training montage from any Rocky movie, including the Creeds?
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a great question, and I've been thinking about it. I gotta go nostalgia, the one that I've listened to the most, like the music over and over. It was off of the Rocky II soundtrack. But that's not to say that the pop songs in Rocky IV weren't special to me either. You know, Burning Hearts and Hearts on Fire and There's No Easy Way Out and all that. You know, that was a great record too. But if you're throwing Creed in there, I do really like that the desert training in Creed too.
You know, so good.
That's pretty badass.
So good. I think
I have that. I have a jogging playlist, even though I don't jog that much, obviously. But when I do, that's on there, along with other Rocky training. Conquest, right? Is it Conquest?
Yep, mm-hmm. Conquest. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the like score of Rocky II. Rocky IV, the score, there's a track called Training Montage that mm-hmm. it was on repeat the entirety of 2023 at the gym. The full lift Training Montage. And if I needed like a pick-me-up, then I would pivot to Hearts on Fire. But my favorite like blast training montage is Rocky III. I'll send Apollo mm-hmm. and Rocky running on the beach to my cousin like once a week. I love that scene.
So I had that soundtrack too, and that was the picture on the back cover of the vinyl was them two dancing in the water, you know. Great training montage. You know, like all of them, but that one especially, the failure turning into the triumph, right? Not being able to swim, not being able to beat Apollo, all of those things. And then by the end, just killing it.
Yeah, I love this franchise. And between, I think it has the one stain with five. You can say what you want about Balboa and Creed 3 if you want. I think those are good movies too.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if this is a question for the next one, but is this the best movie franchise of all time?
Best. Yeah, you know, it really stinks that Rocky V's in there because it really does take a hit with that. You know, to be the best, do you have to hit it out of the park every time, right?
I think so.
And honestly, I will say this because this is not on my list, but it's very important to the cinematic landscape of the last 20 years and to you guys as well, is I consider the MCU a franchise, right? And I think what Feige did over 22 films up to whatever the count was up to Avengers Endgame is the greatest thing anybody's ever accomplished because it was so complex, so big, so many movies, all back then tying in together brilliantly, and all the way up through Endgame. Now, everybody can say that MCU's lost its way, or, you know, you guys have said it, superhero fatigue and all that, which I absolutely think is real. But up to Endgame, they were almost perfect. So if you look at that as a franchise, man, I don't know how you beat that.
I'm very okay with that take. It's just everything afterwards has kind of broken my heart. It's kind of like a Star Wars thing. But I'm sure we'll get to that soon.
I'm almost to the point now where I don't even care about seeing them in the theater. Like nothing is exciting to me. Like, you know, the Marvels or whatever. I just didn't care. And that was not me pre-Endgame. Right. I was there for Captain Marvel day one. I was there for everything day one, dragging everybody in the house to go. But now I don't care. And that's a shame because I never thought I would say that.
I never thought I would either. I mean, Steve has seen in real time my I've fallen out of love with the MCU. The way you talk about Rocky and Jurassic Park and can recap all these stories and the nuances. That's how I was with like, you know, Thor 1.
Absolutely.
This franchise. Yeah. It stinks, but I feel this way about your number one blast movie. Not the original, of course, but the franchise itself, Star Wars. So mm-hmm. I'd love to get a little blast to the past of when it was at its peak of its powers.
Yeah. So you guys know it was, you know, it was the biggest movie of all time back then when it came out out of nowhere, right? Nobody was expecting anything from this. No studios would make it. Alan Ladd at 20th Century finally took a chance on it. It's supposed to be just a piece of, you know, the backside of a drive-in double feature, maybe. It just was not expected to do anything. And in fact, I just heard this like a couple of weeks ago, and I never heard this before, that Spielberg has Close Encounters coming out. Lucas has Star Wars coming out. Lucas has no faith that Star Wars, you know, oh, it's not going to make any money. It's not going to make any money. And Spielberg said, I bet you 2% of Close Encounters against 2% of Star Wars that you're going to be just fine. And if I didn't think you were going to be fine, I wouldn't be betting 2%. So basically, whoever's movie made more, they swapped 2%. So Spielberg gets 2% of all Star Wars royalties because of that bet to this day.
Holy, that's a lot of matzo.
Yeah.
Right. Now, less what Lucas got for the 2% of Close Encounters, but it ain't even close. But anyway, it's bigger than you can imagine because there is no internet. There is no podcast. There is no, you know, with the internet and social media today, everything's kind of diluted, right? It's everywhere, and it's almost too much content. But when you've got four channels on TV and you've got, you know, magazines or newspapers is about the only thing that you can read about entertainment or something like that. Every single one of those channels, every single one of those magazines or whatever had Star Wars on the cover forever. You know, you have C-3PO and R2-D2 showing up on every TV show, on every talk show. You have the toys have taken over the stores. Every kid at school had the Star Wars lunchboxes. I don't know if you guys had lunchboxes when you were growing up. And if you did, was there one thing that everybody had, or was it a whole bunch of things? Because our school, all Star Wars.
I was a brown bag kid.
Like when we were kids, I remember a lot of Transformers lunchboxes. Okay. Resurgence with the Michael Bay films.
Yeah. Yeah, my younger brothers were big into Transformers, so that was a generation well after me. But I had the Star Wars lunchbox, then I had an Empire Strikes Back lunchbox, and then I had a Return of the Jedi lunchbox, and then I got to brown bag because then I was too cool. But I had to hide my Star Wars fandom after that point. Let's put it that way. I was still buying all the action figures, but it wasn't cool anymore, you know, as you got older. It was huge. It's the biggest thing that I've ever seen. I'm 50 years old and I've seen everything. And there's nothing that compares in my lifetime of going to see Star Wars Episode 4, even though it just said Star Wars back then, you know, no Episode 4. There's nothing that stands out more to me than that. In walking and having a single movie just change, I know it sounds cheesy, but it changed my life. Like, I mean, for years, that's what I cared about. It's what I did. You know, it's what I bonded with people over. It's when I met my wife. It's what we talked about. You know, how big of a Star Wars fan she was. Star Wars has completely shaped, not shaped me as a person, but like it's been a part of my life through everything. Like the first trilogy was my childhood. When I think of my childhood, I think of Star Wars first and foremost, and then things like Rocky, of course, were huge. But first and foremost, Star Wars. We're talking wallpaper, curtains, every toy, whatever it was. My life was Star Wars. And then when the prequels came out, I was started dating my wife, got married, and we had babies. So we started dating the summer of Phantom Menace, got married, and Attack of the Clones, and started having babies at Revenge of the Sith. So that was huge. And then the latest trilogy, my kids were alive and able to go to movies, and bringing my kids to see Star Wars was something I honestly dreamed about. Like, oh my God, I can't. And I didn't think it would be Star Wars. I thought, you know, I can't wait till my kids are old enough to love the things I love. Right. And then when Disney bought Lucas and they announced they're making new movies, I was so excited knowing that I was going to be able to take my kids to see Star Wars movies. So it's literally been in my life and a major factor through every phase of it.
So I got to ask, that very first time you saw A New Hope in theaters, was there a moment when you knew, like, this was something special, you were all in? Was it from the start, or what scene?
The opening scene, of course, was something that I had never experienced, but it was so loud. And that's what I remember. Like, oh my God, this is so loud. I don't know if I can take it, right? Because I was a little kid. And it was just so overwhelming. Like, just the size and the sound was so overwhelming. I didn't know if I was going to be scared, like, and start crying. Like, it was that overwhelming emotionally. And then right after that, the part that freaked me out, and I thought I was going to be there, I may not make it through this movie. Because remember, Jaws had just come out not too long before, and Jaws scared the shit out of me. I could not watch it. Could not watch it. So I was afraid this was happening with Star Wars. And then when Vader picks up that rebel leader, that guy in the hallway there, I was like, oh, that's it. Uh-oh. I don't know if I can do this. And that first 10 minutes stands out so much to me, of just jaw open, scared. Like, you can't imagine being 4 years old in the big theater, 5 years old, huge, huge screens back then, right? Just single theaters, huge screens. And Darth Vader was scary as crap when he first came out. You know, he became Dad Vader and all that eventually. But that first one, man, oh, God. And then the second one, when they came up with the Imperial March, well, that was a whole different thing too. But, yeah, I'll never forget it. I called my dad today to tell him I was doing this. And reminisce about, you remember when we, you know, I'll never forget it. I can't even tell you how many movies I've seen in my life. And that absolutely has to be the one that stands out the most.
Gosh, that's so cool. I'm trying to think, like, obviously the original, maybe it's a phenomenon, but Empire, everyone and their mother is anticipating it. So yep. For these, like, single theaters, like, you can't book on Fandango in, you know, 81. So, like, what is the process of, like, are you waiting outside the door for 4 hours? What was it like?
Exactly. So so it's funny. Each trilogy has been interesting for me because back then you waited outside. There's a ticket booth at every theater. It was outside. I don't recall ever having a single ticket taker inside. You know, they're inside and you're going up to the window. It's just like you see on in the old movies or whatever. What was it? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where Sharon Tate's going to her movie. You know, she goes up to that glass window, buys a ticket. I'm in this movie. That sort of thing. It was just like that. In big movies like that, Jaws, Star Wars, Raiders, whatever they were, there were literally lines down the block, hence the title Blockbuster and all that, right? That's where it comes from. It's people literally waited around the block. And it wasn't just Star Wars. It was anything somewhat big. You were always waiting in line to buy a movie ticket. Empire Strikes Back is the one I remember the most because the line was massive. And I think we had to wait two or three movies to get in. Because what would happen is they'd sell out and you'd stay in line while the movie played and wait for the next one. Luckily, my neighbor's dad was so as psyched as we were, so he didn't care. So we waited. But I'll never forget Empire Strikes Back. We waited so long. My sister fell asleep in the movie, and I was pissed. How can you fall asleep during this movie? Return of the Jedi, the lines were so long. We went two or three times and didn't get to see the movie. And I was – imagine being that kid, right, waiting for Return of the Jedi. You've waited 3 years for this. And you go to the movies, and it's sold out. Oh, you come back God. A couple days later, you go, it's sold out. It's the most, like, traumatic thing that you can have happen. My dad felt so bad that every time we went, it was sold out. That he was going to pick me up from school, pull me out of school to go see it. And if you know my dad, that is not him. My dad is not a movie guy. He's not a Star Wars guy, and he's a, you get to work and, you know, there's no fun to be had when work's going on. For him to take a day off of work and take me out of school to go see it was a huge, he ended up not being able to. He had to tell me this story in retrospect, but that's how big of a deal it was. like I said, I don't think my dad's ever taken a day off of work, and he was going to take a day off of work because we could not get in to see Return of the Jedi. Gosh. Because, to your point, there is no Fandango, there is no reserve seats or anything like that.
What an impossible premise.
Yeah.
I like. It sounds like an amusement park. It sounds like Six Flags without Flash Pass, but worse. Yes. But days yep. worse. I mean, that's, gosh, that feels like a legitimate blast of the past. I can't, it's hard to picture. It's hard to picture.
Did you ever meet my friend Dave Donkey up at the lake?
No, I don't think
so. Guy I went to grade school with, high school. We've been friends forever. He's got a place on the lake. A friend of ours who just passed away, we were just at his funeral, unfortunately, a couple months ago. He snuck in a camcorder, Return of the Jedi. You know, they're this big, right? And they're two. There's not just the big camera that you put on your shoulder, but you have to carry around a VCR with you that holds the tape that's recording. It's a two-parter. You have a camera and a VCR portable that you're carrying with you. He somehow snuck it into the movie theater, videotaped the movie, and we would watch it over and over in the worst, like mid-80s, you know, 1983 quality home camcorder in a movie theater with him moving all around, hiding it under his coat, and we would watch that thing all day long. It was so big.
I'd even put that together. I mean, when was, like, movie comes out, it leaves theaters. How long until it's either, like, running on cable or, like, when is VHS a thing? Like, when can you rewatch it?
So Star Wars and Empire was just, they would just keep re-releasing them. And I can't remember how often, but fairly often, at least once a year, they were back out in theaters. So you just went when they came back out in theaters. I saw Star Wars, the first one, probably 5-6 times in theaters, and only once in the original theatrical run.
Wow.
But they would keep re-releasing it. And remember, back then, movies, when they were released, they played for a long time. You know, like some of them, Star Wars might have been in some theaters for a year. And that's not an exaggeration. They just played forever. If they kept selling tickets, they kept them in. Return of the Jedi was kind of the change, I guess you'd say, because that is when VHS started coming about. You got to remember, those things were super expensive back then. We didn't have one for a long time. So I think people started watching it at home, and cable was just coming about. There was a service, you guys have never heard of it. It was called On TV. In the Chicagoland area, before cable, it's one channel. Picture a HBO-like channel. And it was broadcast over the air. But you had to have a little box on your TV that would just scramble the over-air signal. So you paid for this box. It was called On TV. And they promoted for months. Every month they'd send you a little TV guide. Here's what's coming on TV this month. And it was always movies like HBO, whatever. It was recently out of theaters or whatever. And they had signed a deal with Star Wars. They were bringing Star Wars into your home. It was such a big deal. And we planned this for months. I think my parents, I'm not kidding, my parents had a party and there was probably 50, 60 people over because we had on TV and Star Wars was going to be on at 7 o'clock. And they probably had a party, 50, 60 people with simulcast in stereo. So my dad's hi-fi was on for, you know, like stereo sound. And we're talking about TVs that are what, maybe 25 inches back then. I mean, and you had all 50, 60 people in that house crammed into one room staring at the screen because we could see Star Wars at home.
Gosh.
I'll never forget it.
The ultimate blast movie, the ultimate experience. You have decades worth of memories because of one movie that came out and created a lifetime of memories. It's bizarre, but so cool.
and it's the gift that keeps on giving, like I said. And then in my 20s, that they came out with the prequels, and then as a father, they came out with the new ones. Like just never stopped. Now they kind of ruined it with Last Jedi, and
oh boy. And all right, time to wrap up, right?
Go ahead. No, I think the biggest problem with the last Star Wars movies was, unlike what they did with Marvel, right? Feige created this universe. He had all these different directors pitching in. with their takes, but it all fit into Feige's universe, and it worked. Kathleen Kennedy, she never created a universe. She just said, "Hey, I'm going to hire this director. Go write something, and we'll try to squeeze it in." And you could tell, you know, from The Force Awakens to The Last Jedi, they didn't fit. There was no cohesion there, mm-hmm. And so then, of course, JJ is scrambling in Rise of Skywalker to try to piece it all back together. They did not have a Kevin Feige on that last trilogy, and I think it's kind of killed Star Wars ever since. I think
I completely agree with you. I know Ty is a big Last Jedi truther, but there's no denying that the fans have been split since then, and it feels like there's not really a universal love for this anymore. Were you a big fan of the prequels when they came out, or was there kind of that division still?
No, you know, it's funny because I think you said it earlier about the movie that you have to convince yourself is great, right? So I go to see Phantom Menace, and it's back to waiting in line. And I don't think I had waited in a line for a movie for a long time. I think we waited in line to get tickets to see Waterboy. Whoa. To see the trailer. There were lines. I think it was with Waterboy, Adam Sandler. I think they announced they were showing the trailer for Phantom Menace with that movie. There were lines to see Waterboy because of the trailer for Phantom Menace. Wow. That's how big it was. I'm not kidding. I mean, lines. And people would go to see Waterboy. They'd see the trailer and leave. Like, they didn't care about Waterboy, even though they should. And I went to see Phantom Menace with my brother, who is now 38, 39 years old. At the time, I think he was 12, somewhere around the right age to see Phantom Menace. And we came out of that, and he said, "Oh, that is the greatest movie of all time. That is a great." He was flying high as a kite. And I'm like, and his excitement had me excited, you know. So I like, well, that was amazing. That was great. And then, of course, by the time you see Phantom Menace for the fifth time, sixth time, you're like, it's not as great as I thought it was. But you know, your boss Naz or whatever, and you know the weirdness. But yeah, that's it. That's what I was looking for. But it was all, you know, it was still super huge, super exciting to have it back on the screen. And Attack of the Clones, Amy and I were just married. And so it was exciting because we were just married and our first Star Wars movie together and all that. And every single one of them is special for different reasons to me. And I have a story behind every one of them. The only one, that I look back and go, huh, was Last Jedi. And it's only because of that stupid Benicio del Toro in the casino stuff. Like, what the hell was all that? Why is that in that movie? I don't understand. We need John Boyega to go do something. So let's just invent this Canto Bite, the 40-minute sojourn out of the main story that goes nowhere. No, not interested.
Hey, though, besides those 40 minutes.
Right. Well, I think it was you, Steve, in another podcast. We're talking about Luke Skywalker. You guys were talking about how you relate to characters in movies. Like, and I think you mentioned Luke Skywalker, how you could relate to him. And that was a thing, right? Like, when Empire Strikes Back was so hard for me as a kid to see because you guys had Return of the Jedi to jump right into. I had to wait 3 years to find out, was Darth Vader really Luke's father? Was he lying to him? Was Luke going to ever be functional again now that he had his hand cut off? What was going to it left a kid like me, it left on such a bad note. Like, it was 3 years of torture. It wasn't a happy ending in any way, shape, or form. And I could just relate to Luke, like, oh my God, he's, you know, the guy's lost, and he's lost his best friend, his frozen and carved, all of this stuff. And then in Last Jedi, Luke wasn't Luke. Like, we finally get Luke back, and he's not Luke. You know, it's kind of like we talked about earlier in Rocky V. He just, it was not the same character. And I'm all for character growth and ups and downs and changes, but I think the public has spoken. That was not Luke.
Hey, even Hamill spoke. saying that it's not really Luke. So if Luke is saying it's not Luke, then you got to kind of buy it, right?
Right, exactly.
We need to have you on when we do our, like, we intend to do like a full rehash of the sequel trilogy and how it could be better. During COVID, when we had nothing better to do, I mean, Steve can attest, I would send him like 20 to 30 pages of a Rise of Skywalker rewrite to try and save the trilogy, and I'd have him like edit it. I mean, that thing got to like 70 pages. We were cooking for a while, but yeah, what a mess.
You know, I don't know why I've stayed away from a lot of rewatches on Rise of Skywalker, but
it's bad.
And maybe because I don't want to ruin it. But I still think it, to me, it was better than
The
Last Jedi.
Oh, God.
I know that's blasphemy, but and that's why I haven't watched it. Like, I watched it a couple times when it came out, and I haven't watched it since because I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah, it's a big mess.
They're the two movies are closer than people think. But it's I remember. I mean, what your Last Jedi is, I think, is what my Rise of Skywalker was. I was sitting in the row. I had bought, I think, 14 seats for me and all of my friends to go on opening night. And I had read the script leaks from supposedly Boyega, like, leaving his his script on the bed or whatever. And as I watched them slowly come true, I was...
Yeah. Nothing is worse than the hype of a movie and then that letdown, you know. And there's only a few that could be so huge as Star Wars, right? Like, you just can't let it stumble because it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, all right, so let's get back to the good old days of Star Wars really quick. Before we jump, favorite Star Wars moment. It can be in the theater or at home. Just favorite, like, scene. As a moment.
Favorite scene of Star Wars as a moment. I gotta say, you know, Han Solo coming in to save the day in the first one, you're all clear, kid. Let's blow this thing and go home. That was a moment where people in the theater were going apeshit, right? They had no clue that was coming. They were going crazy. So that always stuck out for sure. I love the scene right before Harrison Ford gets frozen in carbonite and she says, "I love you." And he says, "I know." You know, I just, that is one of my favorite romantic lines ever. I just love his delivery of that is fantastic. But one that stands out, and my kids always mock me for, still to this day, is The Force Awakens when Han Solo gets it. I knew it was coming, and it was my whole lifetime of Han Solo, and that was just, oh God, it was hard. It was hard. I don't know if I've cried harder in the theater aside from that. Maybe E.T. I don't know.
Oh man, that's devastating. I remember The Force Awakens, someone had tweeted out right before I saw the movie, Han Solo dies. And I tried to like gaslight myself into believing that they were lying.
Right.
In the theater. Right. And he lines up with Kylo Ren on that bridge. I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. No way.
Which is a great shot. I mean, like that was a great The whole thing was beautiful.
So it sounds like Han Solo is like Star Wars character number one for you.
Yeah, maybe. And I was a huge Harrison Ford guy. I mean, huge because of Indiana Jones. You know, at one point, like he was the biggest box office star in the world, right? Nobody had made more money. Nobody's movies had made more money than Harrison Ford, you know, because you had Star Wars, you had Indiana Jones, you had Jack Ryan, you had Witness, The Fugitive. Like, he was just the greatest, you know. And it was all an accident, right? He wasn't supposed to be in Star Wars. He wasn't supposed to be in Indiana Jones. It's just, God, well, they hit gold when they got him.
All right. So next time we'll do a top three Harrison Ford blast movies when we have you on. But we've been ranting for far too long. We got three movie nerds just going at it right now. So we'll have to do this again. Jason's been an absolute pleasure. Hope to have you on again soon. Thank you all.
I'd love to.
Yeah. We'd love to have you back. But thank you all for listening. And we'll catch you on the next one.